Hi, listeners. It's Steve F from Chamberlains again, and we're back chatting to Condon Advisory and Harry from our property and commercial team. Gentlemen, how are you going?
Good.
Really well.
Yeah, not too bad.
Look, it's an auspicious day. We're here chatting about all things property, all things corporate insolvency, and a lot of what's going on with the federal government's decision with respect to tenants nationally. Harry, have you seen a lot of distress in the market with respect to the tenant side?
I have, in fact, yes. And not only are tenants suffering, but also landlords. And I've seen it on the faces of some landlords, really genuinely stressed.
Wow. I guess it's concerning because something that we worry about a lot in the context of the corporate insolvency space is generally the conduct of landlords and even historically the very aggressive action they've taken against their corporate tenants. We'll all recall the changes to the voluntary administration regime, really very much led by, the conduct of Westfield in South Australia and what it used to do when people would suffer corporate financial distress. Sean, you've been in the industry for almost 40 years. Tell us a bit about what happened.
Look, it's really interesting. I remember one job I had myself. It was in one of the centres. I can't say that it's the brand name that you mentioned, but it was in one of the centres. And we got appointed by the court, so we got notification about lunchtime, and I went out to the premises that afternoon. And it was an interior decorating shop, so it had a bit of paint, mainly paper, wallpapers and all of those sorts of things. I arrived out there, there wasn't a lot left. The director hadn't been there that day, so it had been closed up, but I managed to get access to the premises, and there was some fit out, a bit of stock and whatnot. So I ended up going and seeing the centre manager, told him that I was going to get a valuer out the following morning and we'd sort out whatever. And he said, yeah, look, that's all fine. But I queried him about selling the business and he said, look, we're not really interested in this type of business there anymore because it's not generating the turnover that we expect to cover the rents that they were demanding. And I accepted that. Now, the following morning when I arrived with my valuer, we were confronted with a completely empty stock.
Wow.
And I was bewildered. We went down to see center management and there's no one around. There was nobody to speak to. And I ended up managing to speak to one of the other shop owners who took me out the back into the delivery bay area behind the shops on the condition that I didn't disclose to anyone who'd done it. But he said, what effectively happened, he said, mate, 5 minutes after you left yesterday, they came in and they pulled everything out of the store and put it out the back, and a message was given to all of the shopkeepers that anything they wanted, they could have.
Wow.
And so, any ability to trade the business on or anything was lost in that one single action, and that bloody-mindedness of, we don't care, was it. And there is a lot for some certain groups of landlords to pay for, and they've driven rents to levels which were unsustainable, which at the first point was the thing that drove the internet supply people to the position that they were.
Yeah.
I mean, the minute you say you've got this, a similar situation occurred actually in the taxi industry because you've suddenly got an amazing cost to buy the plate. And the return on the plate meant that had to be added to the cab fare, which meant it became disproportionate. So Uber's ability to walk through the door and squash it was quite successful. And now it's quite interesting. The cost of an Uber fare in certain instances can be very similar, if not more than an ordinary taxi fare. So it's really interesting. There's changes had to come, and I think, as Harold was saying, in the current market, this is probably one of the best situations where landlord and tenant need to sit down and work out a solution which is not going to be what either party wants.
Yeah.
But it's got to be found on common ground. The landlord must understand what's going on and what potential future demands on business premises could well be, and they can set a level of rent where the tenant says, I can't operate at that point. And so they will go and find alternate solutions, whether it's telling staff to work from home, you know, with the lack of having the need to bring people into offices, then you can go and get a factory unit style of thing and have the staff coming in there, and then you've got storage space and all sorts of options. That the whole world is a very changing place. But I think for any landlord that wants to go for a confrontational approach, and in, for the very large retailers, because I think they're the only ones that are actually driving a tenant confrontational approach, I think it could be a very costly decision at the end of the day. One of the interesting quotes that I read the other day coming out of the US, there's actually malls now that are buying up the dying brands, the franchise type brands, and buying them up so that it'll switch from being landlord to actually the business owner of a number of stores, which they operate in a number of environments. So the market's changing underneath everyone right now.
Wow, that is that's quite illuminating, because what you were saying and what Harry mentioned got me thinking about this intersection of the preservation of value. You know, for the last 20 years in particular in insolvency, we really talk about the preservation of value to the extent that we can. It's not about being punitive. It's not just about investigation. It's about preserving businesses in the VA process or through schemes of arrangement, or preserving value, at least some value, for creditors in the context of liquidation. But this seems to be emerging of how do you preserve the value of landlord businesses and their enterprises, particularly the mega landlords across the nation, and the value to society and the potential detriment of their many tenants continuing to face ongoing financial distress. How do you think that there is a way forward for a consensus-based landlord tenancy advocacy process?
Well, it's an interesting question, Stippe. I've often thought whether the landlord and the tenant form some sort of cooperative or joint venture, in a sense, and tried to share in the profits, let's say, of the business itself, and rent be determined in accordance with that somehow. Yes, it's a difficult question.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think even hearing you work through the question in your mind, I can see that it's going to require, if something like that was to be successful, it's going to require a shift in thinking for landlords and tenants. Gavin, have you seen any scenarios over the last couple of years where, you know, had some consensus been reached between landlords and tenants, a corporate insolvency might have turned from, I guess, a failure to a success?
Yeah, I think there's a number of businesses that we've been involved in. Like one that comes to mind is like a little tire automotive type deal.
Yeah.
It was clearly, you know, the business had issues with, you know, they had the owner effectively wasn't working in the business anymore. He was more just managing staff and not managing that staff well. But our dealings with the landlord was effectively absent for most of the appointment, went through a VA into a lick, and we were, you know, trying to trade on to sell it until it would come to a point where it was just untenable to sell anymore because they couldn't reach an agreement where we had to get it all out and, you know, sell it at effectively a fire sale type value rather than try to find someone that would take over the lease, because the landlord just would not negotiate on a lease. They thought they had this prime spot. Anyone would walk into it. You know, I think we took the appointment a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I think it's still vacant.
Wow.
Because, you know, they just couldn't see sense in getting someone back in there with a reduced rent doing the same thing versus having an empty shop. So I think that's where some of these big mega sort of landlords are going to find a lot of issue. They're going to be, you know, these bigger retailers, franchise retailers, are going to be closing up. And I think they'll find it a lot more difficult to find people that are coming in wanting to pay the rents that they're seeking.
A sobering form of education. Google abandoned, particularly abandoned buildings and structures and things like that. And when you go through and there are complete shopping malls that look like, you know, Westfield here in Parramatta, that have been abandoned for years, full of trees and water and all sorts of things. And it really puts it into perspective that these are realities that not of the future. These are realities that can be found in places around the world right now.
Well, Yeah.
Abandoned places. That's the.
Yeah, I think I seen one the other day on that. A point on that was, you know, the roof had collapsed. There, obviously, yeah. Mosquitoes had started getting in, and water had gotten in, and I think the locals had all put fish in there to sort of kill the mosquitoes, and you know, so potentially as a food source. But like, it's just, it's interesting, and that, you know, I think America is a classic example of having these just vacant malls where they spent millions of dollars on setting them up and end up having no one in them.
Yeah, well, I guess it's an interesting thing to talk about, and certainly when you jump online, they make for really good browsing. But I guess we've just fallen into a recession recently. I mean, not to date this particular recording, but it's a big deal, first time in 60 or 70 years, and maybe something like this will be a reality in the future. But that being said, insolvency for the time being, corporate insolvency numbers are still pretty flat. They're
well down. I mean, I've been watching, we get a daily list of what's happened, and that's been diminishing the further we go into this pandemic. And that's probably a lot to do with the hiatus that we seem to have been parked in. It's almost like a Dick Tracy watch where they say, you know, hold everything, and there's this pause, and then they sort of think about it, what's going on in the middle. And I don't think that's really going to change until we get out of that. But the situation is, if you're insolvent before, particularly in the retail space, then I'm not sure that there's going to be any change to this that's going to bring you out the other end and magically make you solvent. The recession's an interesting point as well, because yes, but in the last few days we've had it announced that Australia is now in recession, first time in 30 years. Prior to, the last one was in 91, 92, and prior to that, we tended to live in a seven-year business cycle, which went from boom to the recessional, not quite depression, but a recessional bust. And in many ways, it was sort of like a cleansing process. There was an amount of insolvency. It wasn't massive. I mean, it was talked about in big terms, but it wasn't catastrophic. And it was, when you really looked at it, most of the businesses that went broke were the ones that should have gone broke. It was almost that part of the business cycle that cleaned the system out. And I've said for the last 30 years, there have been, with cheap interest rates and a whole lot, there's been a lot of businesses kept alive artificially that really should have been out of existence well before now, and stronger ones. And, you know, when you've got a competitor, you put two shops, let's call them computer shops, one's a decent business doing all the right things, and the bloke next door to it's not paying his tax.
Yeah.
And he's discounting his prices to get the trade by not paying his tax. Well, he will go broke at the end of the day because the tax department will come out after him.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, the bloke next door running the legitimate business will go broke as well because the customers aren't coming to him because they can get it cheaper next door.
Yeah.
So that's the damage that's being done to society in this process. There's been, various industries have been in recession within the last 30 years. We as a country haven't been, and that's been mining and property and various other things that have kept the overall up there. But there have been certainly components of the Australian economy that have been suffering for years.
Well, are there any, you know, forget retail, because we spent a lot of today's recording talking about retail and landlords and tenants, but are there any particular industries you think are particularly at risk in the context of what is happening and what may very well get worse before we see this cleansing process, you so speak, of Sean or Gavin?
I think the cleansing, there's going to be a lot of industries that rely on other, like the retail add-on type stuff. So if you're supplying shop fitting, you know, all that sort of manufacturing type stuff, it's probably going to be in for a bit of struggle. Car tire manufacturing type stuff, people aren't driving as much anymore, they're all staying home, so that sort of thing is probably a big issue as well, and that'll flow on to the subsidiary industries in that. But I think it's a lot of, you know, looking at it and where it goes from the top line to where people aren't spending money anymore. Obviously no one's traveling for a long time, so I think we need to talk about travel agents and potential airlines. I think we've all seen those from the news. Don't need to spend any more time talking about them. But it's also the smaller ones, you know, like healthcare services, personal services. People aren't getting their haircuts done as much, nails, all that sort of thing, I think will impact as well. On a personal note, my wife's business, she's a dog groomer. It hasn't been busier ever. Everyone's at home with their pets.
Yeah, It's funny you raise that. I mean, Harry and I were working on a restructure of a business sort of over the last few months, and the superficial indicators during the context of Corona sort of implied that they might really struggle, and we were looking at it from the context of a tenancy advocacy perspective. You start looking at the structure of a business and trying to get out of inefficient leases and really just prod them in the right direction so they can continue to be profitable. And as people started approaching the end of the lockdown period, this particular business boomed because they supplied premium goods for the household, and people were sitting at home and deciding they want those new things around them to make them feel better about all this time they're spending at home. So I think there'll definitely be some winners, but I feel like, you know, for every winner there might be more than a few losers. And do you guys think that the current insolvency industry is going to be going to be able to handle all this corporate insolvency?
Absolutely. I don't think, I mean, there are people coming through the profession. The industry has been smashed for a while. The largest contractor of it has been the treatment of the industry,
yep.
and that's very sad. But there is a need for insolvency. As long as people are lending, there will be people going broke, and therefore you need a proper system and a properly organised system to deal with that. But with the onslaught, we have been underutilised for some time now,
yep.
and this will just mean that we will get busy. We've been busy before, and as I think Gavin might have made a comment a little bit earlier, when you've got a hook in, we hook in, and you get the job done, and you do it. Hopefully, what this might do is we give us everyone a chance to look at what parts of this are inefficient, and maybe now's the time to get some of the garbage out of the system in how we deal with things. Something that can be done in 15 minutes takes 2.5 hours because of the red tape that gets added to it. They're the sorts of things that could truly be focused on at this point in time.
Yeah, it's an interesting point because you circle back to things like creditor outcomes, and I guess the primary goals of the corporate insolvency system in Australia, at least outside of the voluntary administration process, and you think how much better would creditors be if it was just cheaper and easier for those independent persons like yourselves who are involved in industry to get better outcomes for them. I mean, ultimately, red tape doesn't help anyone other than the government. But it's an interesting thought as well, I think, in the context of people really thinking about where they will be 6, 12, 18 months from now. So not so much insolvency practitioners and lawyers, but our clients in the industry. Am I someone who hasn't yet fully appreciated the financial, social, cultural impacts of this recession or of what's about to happen in my sector? Am I being supported by government stimulus and incentives? And maybe now is the time for them to get advice. At a previous session we had about personal insolvency, we talked about getting good advice early, being decisive, taking action and mitigating risk. I genuinely fear that there are a lot of industry participants, a lot of small businesses who are sticking their head in their sand at the moment. And the ultimate loser for that will be society.
Yeah, I think I agree today. I think the issue with most of the people when they're dealing with insolvency is they do put their head in the sand, they don't look at their options, and they tend not to look at those options until they're forced to. Either a creditor pushing them towards something, the ATO chasing its debts, or you know, your supplier's putting you on CID and you're going, well, I don't have any cash anymore. How do I deal with it? And I think there's a huge swath of businesses out there that are being funded by the government at the moment that ought not to be, that are going to really struggle once some of the benefits of the current situation start being removed. And will ultimately, you know, the best thing they should be doing right now is going, well, I am being funded by the government right now. Maybe I need to go speak with an insolvency practitioner so I can clear some of the old dead wood that's in my business, grow through a proper restructure, and then be able to come out on the other side cleaner, leaner, a bit more mean, because you've had to go through this process and really had to have the hard conversations with some proper professionals about what your business needs to look like to make money in the future.
Look, I think that's a really pertinent and meaningful point to end on. I think this is all about helping people to continue to make money and to continue to be prosperous. And if you're not getting advice today, then maybe you're not going to get the outcomes that you want. So, gentlemen, it's been lovely chatting and look forward to
doing it again. Thank you very much for the opportunity. It's been really good.
Great.
Thanks, Debbie.
Thank you.
Thanks, Debbie.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. As with all Chamberlain's Law Firm podcasts, the information that you have heard in this podcast is not legal advice and cannot be considered legal advice. If you have any questions or queries, please do not hesitate to contact our office on 02 6188 3600 or otherwise look us up on our website, which is www.chamberlains.com.au.